Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is Robert Freeman, Executive Director of the Committee on Open Government and one of the great heroes of the Albany scene. The committee is responsible for overseeing and advising with regard to the Freedom of Information Law, the Open Meetings Law, and the Personal Privacy Protection Law. Welcome, Bob. You know, it must be tough to be called a hero, but everybody thinks that of you.
Well, thank you so much. The reality is that I have the luxury of having the opportunity to give what I think is the right answer under the law, regardless of the source of the question. And the truth is that we pick up the phone regardless of who's at the other end. It's a degree of independence that I think is unique in state government today, and I'm grateful for it.
So how come you have that independence? I mean, some of these guys who are in charge of state government and who are more and more in an unflattering light could fire you, and yet they don't.
Obviously, I'd like to think that it's based solely upon expertise, but it's beyond that. And I'll provide just a touch of history, and you're well aware of this. My first boss, for all intents and purposes, was a former Secretary of State in 1975, Mario Cuomo. And above all, at least as I recall, he was interested in compliance with law. He was a lawyer. And if he believed that I offered the right response on the law, he was completely supportive. And that has remained for all of these 40 years. I believe that our current governor recognizes that. The other reality is...
Wait. Let me just interrupt and say that our current governor is the son of the governor, the Secretary of State, who became governor. So
right.
That there's a certain... maybe obligation to the memory of his dad, right?
Well, that could be. There may be a degree of loyalty coming, you know, on both ends. But, you know, aside from that, relationships develop over the course of time with people in government, outside of government, and to be honest, especially with the news media as an industry. We receive in this office well over 1,000 inquiries from members of the news media each year. I'm always on the record. Again, all I try to do is give the right answer. So there's a degree of, let's call it trust, in a way, a symbiotic relationship between myself and any number of members of the news media that I think is recognized by this administration and has been by every administration since Hugh Carey.
So to put a face on that, have any of your decisions ever cost you sleep at night?
You know, there was one once upon a time, and it was a very unusual situation. It goes back to the 80s when Mario Cuomo was running for governor, as was Mayor Ed Koch. And if you recall, Mayor Koch gave an interview to Playboy magazine.
I remember it very well. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we found out that the mayor records all of his interviews with the news media. And of course, the Gannett newspaper at the time requested under FOIL those tapes.
Just tell everybody who's listening who may not be acquainted with it what FOIL is.
Okay, I'm sorry. FOIL stands for Freedom of Information Law. It is the law that generally gives the public rights of access to government records. It's based primarily on common sense. All it really says is that everything is open except to the extent that disclosure would hurt either somebody in terms of an invasion of privacy, the government in terms of its ability to do its job well on behalf of the public, or on occasion a private company vis-a-vis its competition. So FOIL clearly is based upon a presumption of access.
Okay, now back to the war story. Mayor Koch, who a lot of people presumed was going to be the governor, unfortunately, I wrote a column which Mario never forgot, and I had a radio show with him for a long, long time, but he kept it in his top drawer, and it said, "Meet Governor Koch." Because there was no question he was going to beat him. And Mario turned it around and won. So that there was this long history. So now the question is, do you have to tell Koch to let the media have his interview?
Well, I was hearing from Mayor Koch's attorney. I was hearing from Playboy's attorneys. I was hearing from the Republican candidate, Lou Lehrman, who said, well, if Koch wins the primary, we'll be in court the next day. But best of all, I was at the Oda Saga for a conference of newspaper editors, and they wanted me to do a program, and all the candidates were invited, and there was Ed Koch. There was Mario Cuomo, who was giving his talk, turning around when he was speaking, looking at me and saying, wow, wait until we hear these tapes. So there was a degree of pressure. And, you know, my belief was that if Mayor Koch had won, I was gone. I was gone. And the rest, as they say, was history. I wrote an opinion suggesting that these tapes are indeed records that fall within the coverage of FOIL. They were obviously for public consumption. They were given to a news media organization. But the issue disappeared when Mario Cuomo beat Mayor Koch in the primary.
Yeah, but what were some of the things on the tape? Things like, I don't go to Albany, there are no Chinese restaurants, or they all have pickup trucks with guns
dresses,
in the back window?
Yes, well, probably a good reason for Koch's defeat involved his criticism of those of us who live north of Westchester.
Part of your invincibility, I think, is that, you know, let anybody touch a hair on your head and the entire media of New York State will come down with, you know, a protective sheen that everybody recognizes. I mean, part of it is that you are their guy, you have been protecting them, and they owe you something.
I don't think they owe me anything. And
right thing to say, but not
true. People don't recognize this. There are any number of situations in which reporters call, and I suggest to them that, yes, there was a valid reason for withholding the record or closing the meeting.
Sure.
The reality is we never hear about that because compliance with law is not newsworthy. But along with that, I think, is what I mentioned earlier, a degree of trust. Reporters don't want to be embarrassed either by being wrong. They would rather be right on the law as well. Well, and they call me. They rely upon this office. And by the way, this is a tiny office. The staff is two of us. I describe this as the smallest state agency that actually does things and leave the rest to people's imaginations.
We are talking to Robert Freeman, a guy, I don't know how many classes you've come to that I ran. I don't know how many times we've done this show. But as I said in the beginning, a hero you are, no matter how much you want to deny it because you've got guts.
Well,
okay.
Thank you.
Now, speaking of which, let's transition a little bit. Andrew Cuomo, the governor now, the present governor, said he'd never attended certain meetings, which he did attend, with the Glenwood people. These are the real estate guys who give millions of dollars away. Did that get you into any trouble?
So far, no. And, you know, the reality, too, is that I will receive inquiries from the governor's office, from state agencies, from local governments, as well as the public and the news media. We've come to be relied upon by virtually everybody, which, again, offers, I think, a degree of, let's call it protection, for lack of a better word.
So in a case like this Glenwood thing, what would a possible question that goes to Bob Freeman be like?
One of the questions might involve something like a calendar or an appointment book. Who did you see? When did you see that person? And the reality is, again, I hate to beat on Mayor Koch, but there was a case that goes back a number of years in which the Daily News brought a lawsuit to obtain Mayor Koch's appointment calendar. And he said, it's mine. Again, I wrote an opinion, and I said, nope, it's a record that falls within the framework of FOIL. The suggestion was that those entries that related to the performance of his duties as mayor were public. On the other hand, the entries that involved, who knows what, the birthday party for the kid or the dentist appointment that had nothing to do with the performance of the mayor's duties could be withheld based upon considerations of privacy. And the issue went to court. The court agreed with me. So we have precedent indicating that a government employee's appointment calendar is public. Now, there are obvious exceptions that relate to a governor, that deal with security, that deal with safety, where not everything will necessarily be disclosed. But most of what people would be interested in, I believe, would have to be disclosed to comply with FOIL.
So, Bob Freeman, do you ever, after winning a great victory like that, do you ever look back in history and say, maybe I wasn't right about that? Let me give you an example that I'm thinking of right now. Not one, but two major figures are now under indictment for having gotten things for their kids. But you just went through saying, you know, birthday parties might be off limits. Well, if somebody shows up with a wad of cash for the kid at the birthday party, that might be relevant. No?
Well, that's why we have an ethics law. That's why we have a J-COPE and a legislative ethics commission. And the reality is that we public employees have to submit detailed financial disclosure statements.
I remember that.
In my case, to J-COPE. And they involve items that are available to the public that ordinarily would not be public at all. Think about it. When I submit my disclosure statement, I have to indicate not only the sources of my income, my assets, but those of my wife. And when I had minor children, my kids as well. Would anybody expect that a private citizen would have to disclose something like that? Of course not. But we public employees we have a greater duty to be accountable than anybody else, which means that we have less privacy than anybody else. So it's inevitable in so many instances that information will come out, it will be disclosed, that may lead to, let's say, unforeseen consequences.
Bob Freeman, talk to us a little bit about open meetings, because a lot of people have definitional problems with what their obligations are. If two of the three people in the board meet in front of the urinals in the bathroom, could that be construed as an open meeting?
Probably not. First of all, the open meetings law applies to so-called public bodies. A public body is an entity consisting of two or more members, either elected or appointed pursuant to law, to carry out some sort of governmental function collectively as a body, like a city council, a town board, a board of education, the planning board, the zoning board. A meeting of a public body involves a gathering of a quorum, a majority of the total membership for the purpose of conducting public business. So the scenario that you just described would not fall within the scope of the open meetings law. That law is not triggered until you have a gathering of a majority quorum that gets together to talk about whatever the business of the body might be.
That's an unfortunate phrasing, but let's just say there are three people in the room, right? Three people on the board. Two of them are in front of the urinals, but they're discussing state business. What about that?
If a board consists of three and two of them are standing wherever to discuss whatever the business of that governmental entity might be, yes, that is a meeting covered by the open meetings law. Now, I have to suggest to you that I've referred often to human nature. You know, last weekend, somebody had a Memorial Day gathering, a barbecue in the backyard, and invited all five town board members. Well, the purpose was social. Social gathering isn't covered by the open meetings law. But what if?
Yeah.
What if three or four out of the five, all of a sudden, they're standing in the corner of the backyard, they're talking about the town budget? That would fly in the face of the open meetings law. And the hope always is that among those who are talking about the budget, at least one is sufficiently knowledgeable and vigilant to say, wait a minute, this is beginning to look like and smell like and taste like a meeting. Let's stop this conversation and continue it within the confines of the open meetings law in full view of the public.
Okay, now I want to get to something that's really on a lot of people's mind. The governor, the present governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, had a policy of destroying emails after 90 days. So then there was a flurry of very adverse publicity. Why would you want to do that? Who are you trying to fool? He got beaten up quite badly in the press. So he decided he was going to have a summit. Now, it would seem the one guy who ought to have been at that summit is you. Were you there?
I was not there.
How come?
I was not invited.
Well, there's an old saying, don't ask a question if you don't already know the answer. Maybe somebody didn't want to ask you a question.
That could be. You know, the reality is that I have been in touch since the summit with the governor's counsel, Alfonso David, and there is, I believe, a likelihood that we will sit down and discuss the development of an email policy. To the best of my knowledge, what came out of the summit was a rejection of this 90-day rule, but no solid policy that establishes real ground rules concerning how long email communications have to be kept. And one of the points that I've made, and I've made it publicly, email is simply a means of communicating a record. Like any other record, the content is what's significant. The content, in my view, should be the key factor in determining whether it can be disposed of or whether it should be retained. And that's the way we look at FOIL, too. Is email always public under FOIL? Well, some of it is, some of it isn't. It's the content that determines what's public and what's not.
So, Bob, how do you know in asking for it whether it meets your criteria? Do you understand?
Well, yeah, of course. And in actuality, the experts regarding the retention and disposal of records are at the state archives. The state archives develops records retention schedules. The 90-day policy, for better or for worse, has been legal. But to my mind, it is a vestige of the past. It was established by the state archives years ago when the typical email was, hey, Alan, you want to get together for lunch next week? Today, here at the Department of State, if there's an announcement of a new policy, we don't get paper anymore. We receive it via email. So email, in general, has taken on a significance that didn't exist when the 90-day rule was created. And even then, what does the 90-day rule say? It says, well, if the email communication is obsolete, if it has no value, yes, it can be disposed of. Now, as I understand, the policy is intended to enable state employees to retain the records for as long as they do have value or utility.
So that's the change. The 90 days has now been changed, up to the employee whether to get rid of it or not based on this utility rule.
Well, I would like to see something that is a little bit more solid. Why? Because we don't necessarily know whether a record that we create today is going to be important tomorrow or 3 months from now or maybe even a year from now. So I think we have to consider this more seriously in terms of the possibilities. Let's put it that way.
Now, when Cuomo calls a summit, shouldn't that be an open meeting?
Well, again, if there is a summit and it involves people from his staff, the comptroller's staff, representatives from the state legislature, the AG, the comptroller, there's no quorum of any particular public body involved, which means that the open meetings law doesn't apply. I mean, we all have heard and read and criticized the notion of the three men or three people in the room. Well, what have you got? You have the executive, you have one representative from the assembly consisting of 150, you have one representative from the Senate, 62, no quorum of any particular public body, the open meetings law doesn't apply. Is it good? Probably not, but is it consistent with law? Yes, for better or for worse.
I hear you. Accidentally, on purpose, they drafted the law that way. That's just wrong, in my opinion.
Well, but then again, you have 150 members of the assembly. If three of them get together to talk about legislation, should that be covered by the open meetings law? The three out of 150 have no authority to do anything. They have to wait for a majority vote of 150 to pass legislation.
On the other hand, Bob Freeman, these guys, we all know how the legislature works. Nothing on the floor counts for that much. There's a big record. Everybody knows that. But before they get on the floor, they duke it out in what's called the conferences or the caucuses, and they sit there and they yell at each other. And of all the things that ought to be on television that isn't, that's it. So we would really know what decision-making was all about. Again, they've defined the law so that doesn't count, right?
Funny thing about that, you know, the open meetings law has always exempted political caucuses from its coverage.
Yeah.
And there's some history there. You know, we, the Committee on Open Government, offered advisory opinions concerning the scope of a political caucus. And five courts agreed with us. And very basically, the notion was that if a majority of the city council or the town board or even the assembly or senate got together to talk about public business, it wasn't really a political caucus. It was really a meeting. Well, that was the law until 1985 when a member of the news media, then as now with the New York Post, as I understand the situation, wrote to the speaker, which then as now had a significant majority of Democrats, and pretty much said, unless you open your caucuses within 2 weeks, we're going to sue you. Well, instead of being sued, the state legislature changed the law practically overnight. And since 1985, it has said that members of a particular political party who serve in the state Senate or the assembly or the legislative body of a county, city, town, or village can meet in a closed political caucus to discuss anything, including matters of public business, which is why the majority in both houses can meet in private to do everything short of voting. And that is why in so many instances, I've suggested, especially to editorial writers, that if the county legislature is 15-2, it may be legal for the 15 to get together in a closed political caucus, but I think it's the worst in public policy. I think it's the stuff of editorials, and I think it warrants criticism. And the reality is that where you do have a terribly unbalanced entity, hardly ever do they take that political caucus to the extreme.
This is something else I want to talk about, and that's personal privacy. I mean, we have a lot of problems getting people to go into government because, yeah, you know, I've heard people say, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to fill out a public disclosure form. I don't want to have them hold me responsible for everything I say. The hell with them. I'm not going to run for office. What do you think?
I think that disclosure, for better or for worse, is part of the deal. I've been doing financial disclosure statements since Hugh Carey's executive order in 1976. I don't really care. I know that some people do, but, you know, realistically, I mean, you know this, government employees, generally speaking, don't get paid that much.
Right.
If anything, I'm embarrassed by my financial disclosure statement. But again, I think that if people are interested in public service, the interest in doing the right thing, in making a contribution, outweighs what, in the scheme of things, is a relatively minimal invasion of privacy.
Now, we've only got about 3 minutes. I want to ask you this. Every year, you draw up a list of things that maybe they should change. Recommendations. What should we be doing to make the processes even more open? And you've just made my hair stand on edge with your story about the conferences. Unbelievable. And how they changed the law overnight so that they could do what they wanted to do. So what are your recommendations to the legislature this year?
We have a slew of recommendations, all designed to make the laws work better. One involves the freedom of information law. I think it may pass. It involves the reality that if you go to court and you win, an agency has almost a year to determine whether to appeal. Access delayed is access denied. We want to streamline the process. We want to expedite the appeal process and essentially force government agencies to make their decisions to appeal quickly. That usually will end the litigation and involve the disclosure of records. There's a bill that has been passed which would bring the Port Authority, a multi-billion-dollar agency, within the scope of FOIL. As a bi-state agency, it had not been. And if Governor Christie signs the equivalent bill in New Jersey, the Port Authority will be subject to the access laws of both states. We've recommended that the state legislature be subject to the same requirements under FOIL as units of state and local government. Bills have been introduced to do that. We'll see whether that happens. I am not optimistic. There are any number of proposals that are designed to make good laws work better.
Now, some of these sound awfully familiar. You've been submitting them for years, and you're getting these looks like, are you kidding?
You know, I think where there's life, there's hope. You know, we offered proposals for years.
I think where there's death, there's hope. But go ahead.
Well, you know, we heard from hundreds of people over the course of time who would go to meetings of their school board, their town board, and say, you know, I'm sitting there in the second row, and the board's in the front of the room looking at page 2, third paragraph, and we have no idea what they're talking about. Well, we recommended legislation year after year after year to remedy that problem, and it was ignored. All of a sudden, in 2011, it passed. It passed. And today, and for the past 3 years, the open meetings law has required that most records that are scheduled to be discussed during an open meeting be made available to the public online whenever possible in advance of the meeting. It's the biggest change in the open meetings law in 30 years. So, yes, there are situations where it might seem as though we're tilting at windmills, that it's hopeless. But as I suggested to you a moment ago, where there's life, there's hope. And Alan, I told you my age earlier. I've been here for 40 years. If I didn't have this degree of optimism and idealism, how could I possibly stick around for as long as I have?
40 years in the wilderness. We're out of time. Our guest has been Robert Freeman, executive director and hero of the Committee on Open Government. Bob, as always, thanks so much for joining us. And really, really, take this as something I absolutely mean. Thank you for all you have done and you're continuing to do. Thanks so much.
The pleasure is absolutely mine, and I thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.